So Melisse, well-being is your specialist area, and clearly you could say that one of the reasons why it's risen to prominence so much over the last 2 or 3 years has been the COVID pandemic, and so it's top of mind for people. Now that we seem to be emerging from that, I appreciate it will be around for a long time, but in terms of countries and organisations getting back to business as usual, whatever that is, what do you think the future of well-being is? Is it going to be on the corporate agenda still?
It's definitely going to be on top of the agenda. There's no question about that, because when you look at what happened during and after COVID now, you see that well-being as being one of the must-haves on human professionals' agendas. So it's there to stay, and it will not go away. I'm not going to go back to the apparent reasons. I mean, there is the, post-traumatic stress syndrome that people are going through now that everything is over. But I don't want to concentrate on the bad stuff here. Like, I want to talk about the good stuff, because over the past 2 years, what we've learned is we can have new ways to work. And those new ways of work need support. And with support, like well-being support, you can actually do many wonders compared to before, you know? So the positive psychology really started kicking in. So instead of talking about what you also talked about, if we, from the employee experience, we take out the not good stuff, and like by not concentrating on that, but just concentrating on the good stuff and making sure that some more of that good stuff is coming out. When you look at numbers, then there's a recent report by McKinsey and Deloitte. Deloitte's numbers say by 2040, 75% of healthcare spending will be well-being spending. So COVID unleashed something that was already in place, it just accelerated it. Well-being was always on the agenda, but it was never this visible. Now it's visible, it's on the rise, and it's going to really dominate the agenda once we hit 2040, right? So before 2040 though, like this is the consumer market that I'm talking about. Usually the enterprise market follows that by 5-10 years, and we're exactly seeing that. By the way, the trend in the employee, the trend in the well-being space was there in the past 10 years. You know, like the industry was very growing with a huge CAGR, and now we're seeing the same thing happening in the employer market, and that's going to stick. According to McKinsey's numbers, this is now a $62 billion market and is growing annually by 6 to 7%.
Okay. When you're talking to a potential client and they say, why do I need to have this? It's not top of my list. No one's raised it in the company. You know, why do I need to invest in this? What do you say?
Mervyn, there are two types of people that are calling us up, right? Like the first one is the one that you didn't mention. There are those companies who actually did a lot of tactical investments over the past 2 years. These are the companies who've done, who bought one meditation app here, one benefits app there, one EAP program here, one challenge app there. So it's actually time for consolidation for those companies. And those companies are the ones who are phoning us up and saying, like, Wellbee says everything under one umbrella, like, it's time for us to consolidate. It's time for us to have this, like, experience layer on top of everything that works for us. So we bring them all under one roof. But for those people who have not started this yet, the main reason, the major reason, of course, it's the trends, right? Like, unfortunately, it's the FOMO, right? Like, everybody else is doing it. As an employer, if you want to get your employer branding to catch up with everything else in the market, you now need to follow through, because this is the, when you look at the benefits that are being offered, there's a benefits report dated 2021 with this, and it shows like well-being as the number one benefit that is currently being offered to employees, and it looks like it's going to stay. So the second type of companies that you just mentioned, those are calling us to say, like, we don't want to, you know, miss this train, we need to hop on it, what can you offer to us?
So you and I worked on a research report together at the beginning of the year, and one of our key
hopefully findings, we will do another one this year.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
One of the findings was that companies were going to invest in training their managers to be what we called mental health first aiders,
right.
to be able to understand kind of when people might be struggling but not admitting. Now, there's some research out in the UK which shows that up to two-thirds of men who are struggling with their mental health will take a day off work, but when they phone in sick, they'll blame it on something else. They don't want to admit that it's their mental health that's the problem. How are companies best able to create mental health first aiders if our employees aren't going to or don't feel comfortable in admitting when they are struggling?
There's a great professor Dr. Neil Greenberg from King's College. I just interviewed him, by the way, for my podcast. So he's an amazing guy. He says, resilience does not lie in the individual, but in the bonds between individuals. So like what's currently happening in the British market on training line managers on how to approach mental well-being is spot on. Because if you wanna build that type of resilience, it starts with having those type of conversations, because most people are ashamed of bringing forward their still, I mean, it's year 2022, but they're still very ashamed of bringing forward their mental health problems, that they're not feeling great, being vulnerable is something that they fear, actually. So having trained individuals within the company to have those type of conversations is a great place to start, I would say, and I would invest further into that.
Okay.
One last thing I wanted to add. We're currently looking, like, there's so much talk around sustainability in the workplace. And when we're talking about the sustainability, we're usually talking about the way we do business or the products that we produce and how their sustainability is faring in the world. But we don't look at the social aspects of the sustainability, right? Like, how do we sustain the people that we have? So we're actually currently running a survey, a multi-country survey with PwC Turkey, to see how sustainability of people, of our people, affects sustainability in our company as a whole, and how it affects productivity and other key metrics. So I'm super excited to share that with you as well. And then I'm super excited to have our next round of report.
I can't wait.
Now we have to do it.
Yes.